from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Yes, it's time for our annual Do I Brine It, Bake It, or Just Never Make It? Thanksgiving Day Meal Preparation Show. In the hour ahead, we'll not only provide answers to all your turkey questions, we'll be covering everything from stuffing to sweet potatoes and alternative approaches, too. Plus, and this is exciting, Thursday is both Thanksgiving and the first day of Hanukkah. So what nouvelle culinary wonders might that inspire? Don't ask the turkey. Ask us. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. An ode to Thanksgiving dinner. Should you brine it, bake it, or just forsake it? This year, the possibilities are endlessly optima because Thanksgiving also happens to be the first day of Hanukkah. No matter your background or geographic region, even if you're vegan, your choices are legion. So don't worry about pie crusts and whether to fake it, because our guests today will tell you how to make it. For reasons that defy all common sense and clearly most journalistic standards, I somehow wind up hosting many of our Forum cooking shows, including today's What to Do About Thanksgiving Dinner show. Joining us are our three guests who will tell us everything we need to know. Tracy Desjardins is chef and owner of Jardiniere, a French-influenced restaurant in Hayes Valley, and Mojita Cucina Mexicana in the San Francisco Ferry Building, also a 2-time James Beard Award winner. Tracy Desjardins, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have you join us. Kim Laidlaw joins us too, writer of KQED's food blog Bay Area Bites. She's a recipe developer and the author of 3 cookbooks, including Home Baked Comfort, Baby and Toddler on the Go, and Dessert of the Day. Kim, good morning.
Good morning.
And here, too, is Stephanie Rosenbaum, local food writer, writes for KQED's food blog, Bay Area Bites, and author of a number of cookbooks, the most recent being The Art of Vintage Cocktails. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning.
So, I did not have a vintage cocktail before I wrote that, I promise. So let's talk about that first sentence. Should you brine it, bake it, just forsake it, grill it, all kinds of options? What should you do with the bird, Tracy?
Well, I'm in favor of brining. I've always barbecued my turkeys. There are a number of reasons why I do that. It's really delicious, but it also frees up your oven to be able to do everything else. And so you get the Weber kettles are perfect for a turkey. It's super easy. You have to have a good amount of coals built up, but it just kind of, you put it in a turkey pan, you put it in the middle, the coals banked out to the outsides, and it just does its thing, and it's totally delicious.
How does that style of cooking affect the sort of endless problem that you always face with dealing with turkeys, that one part of the bird needs to be cooked longer than in others? Is that something that the grilling process evens out?
There's a good trick for dealing with that. If you put ice packs on the breast before you cook the turkey and get the breast super cold, colder than the legs, it balances out the whole thing so that the legs cook more quickly and the breast more slowly. And then you can pretty much nail it and everything's moist and delicious.
And would that apply to whatever method of cooking you choose? Ice the breasts is recommendation?
Absolutely. So, you basically put those ice packs on there and you can wrap a piece of plastic wrap around it. So when you're tempering your turkey, you should bring it to room temperature before you put it in the oven or on the grill, and you keep those breasts nice and cold, and then it kind of balances out the whole thing.
Take them off before you bake.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that gel is not going to really enhance your turkey. Definitely not.
Basting a different meaning if you're doing it with
chemical basting, molecular gastronomy.
Before we get other views on this, I should also give out our phone number, because this show is really all yours. Anything you want to ask about Thanksgiving, maybe even if you want to read a poem, we'll accept that too. 866-733-6786 is our number. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our Facebook page, website as well. Any questions about what to do for Thanksgiving dinner? And we should also note that we've got a number of things already posted on our website at kqed.org. Also, of course, at Bay Area Bites. Pick up on how else you might consider doing the bird, Stephanie.
Well, Kim actually has written a great piece that's on Bay Area Bites about deconstructing the turkey, which means you give up the Norman Rockwell, bring it to the table, huge, brown, but it cooks a lot better. And that actually means taking it apart, cooking the legs separately, kind of more braising them, letting them cook in a moist heat, and then roasting the breast. Kim, do you want to give us some details?
Yeah, explain, because when I first read about this, it's also sometimes called dismantling. It sounds
deconstructed.
It sounds gruesome.
It sounds extreme. So what does that mean?
Well, I had to get over the fact that I couldn't bring the turkey to the table. So last year was the first year that I did it. But you basically take the legs and thighs off of the breast, and then I do a dry brine because I also was tired of the big vats of liquid putting, and I just couldn't find anything big enough to put my giant turkey in. So I did a dry brine with just rubbing it with kosher salt. And then took it apart, and it's a lot easier to fit into your refrigerator. And then I actually braise the legs the day before and let them sit overnight because I think they have a lot more flavor. And then you just roast your breast right before you eat, and it only takes about an hour. So you really cut down a lot of time in the oven. It's also a lot smaller in the oven, so you can fit everything in around it. And then I just slowly reheat the legs and thighs. So it was delicious.
That
it was the first.
Awesome.
It was the first year that all the dark meat was eaten.
Right,
the very first Thanksgiving.
It's a way to convert people. The people say, "Oh no, I don't like dark meat." It's like, "No, you haven't had it."
You do.
Yeah, you do.
You just haven't had it.
If you dismantle, is it possible to reassemble? I mean,
that's what I always wondered about. Could you just pack it back, patch it back together?
Well, you could on a platter. You could put your roasted breast and then put the legs around it. It won't look quite the same. It will probably look like a bit of a flattened turkey.
Let's get to our first caller this morning who already wants to jump beyond the bird and get right to the pie. Daniel in Oakland, go ahead.
Yay.
Hi there.
Go ahead. You're on the air, Daniel.
So I like to make my pumpkin pie from scratch, but a lot of times it's hard to find the right pumpkin to use. Is there another squash that works well that I could substitute?
Yes, yes.
it sounds like Stephanie wants to answer your question. So.
Butternut squash is fantastic. In fact, I think it works so much better than pumpkin. I actually love a combination of butternut squash and a kind of squash called a kabocha squash. I like roasting both of those and then mixing them together and often putting them through a food mill or pureeing them, food processor, mash, potato mash or anything like that. Drain them a bit because sometimes, depending on the age of the squash, it can be a little wet. So heave all your pureed squash into a fine mesh strainer, let it drain for an hour or so, and that will make a fantastic pie. That's actually just how I made. I was doing a test pie last week, and that's what I used, and so much better than pumpkin. Right. Kim had it. Better than pumpkin and definitely better than canned pumpkin.
What other alternatives or ways of kind of dressing up the traditional pumpkin pie do any of you favor? Is there a way of
brulee.
Sort of
brulee? Brulee is
a
trend.
I think brulee is a trend right
Kim,
now.
Kim, go ahead.
You would just sprinkle it with some sugar, just granulated sugar,
and you after put you've it, baked it.
After you've baked it, and then put it under the broiler, or if you have a kitchen torch, which is even more cool, you could use your kitchen torch to. It's like a creme brulee, basically. So you get that nice crisp sugar crust.
Do you use turbinado sugar or just regular granulated?
I think you could use either. I usually tend towards the turbinado.
Yeah.
I think it works a bit better.
Yeah.
We'll come back and talk more about pies, but we've got more bird questions coming up on my screen here in front of me. So let's go back to the bird. We'll come back to pies and desserts in just a bit. Larry in San Francisco is next. Larry, go ahead.
Yeah, great to be back to the bird since that's my responsibility this year.
Okay, good.
I've heard a lot, I've tried to avoid in poultry, tried to avoid ones that have been injected with saline, they always say, and saying that's not good, so I get ones that are natural and not injected. Now, brining. What's the relationship between brining and saline? Do they have the same effect on the cooking of the turkey?
Larry, thanks. Tracy, why don't you take that about the difference between the two and whether or not we're bringing too much more salt, I guess, back into the bird?
The effect is pretty much the same, except that you have more control over what the brining solution is if you're doing it yourself. But basically, you are infusing the meat with salt, and you're making it so it's going to be a lot more moist. You're changing the molecular structure of the turkey, and then you'll end up with a much more moist breast in particular.
Give us a quick guide to what's involved in brining.
So brining is it's going to be water, salt, and sugar in various proportions. There are lots of different recipes out there that you can find. Depending on how strong the solution is, that has bearing on how long you leave it in the brine. So there's anywhere from 12 hours to 24 to, you know, I've seen 48 or even longer. A good trick for brining, because it's hard to find a vessel that's big enough, is to put the brining solution and the turkey into a plastic bag into a cooler and then just throw ice on top of the whole thing, and that gets it out of the way. Thanksgiving is always, you know, you're juggling oven space, you're juggling refrigerator space, and so on and so forth. So it's a really easy way to brine your turkey and not have a, you know, giant 5-gallon bucket in your fridge for
It has to be completely submerged.
It needs to be submerged, yeah. It has to be totally
submerged. So that it's even.
Yeah,
so
it's
even. You can add aromatics to the brine, too.
Yeah, I put thyme and sage and garlic and onions and all kinds of stuff, peppercorns, bay leaf in my brines.
Larry, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Dan in San Mateo. Dan, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I have a question about turning the bird, as in rotisserie. I know the Weber kettle makes a ring and a motor assembly that they make for their barbecue. And I'm wondering whether it cooks the bird evenly, if it comes out any better or worse than just regular grilling, or better than the oven or worse. And I'll take my answer off there.
Dan, thank you. You're a grill master here this morning. Tracy, what do you think?
You know, when I was a kid growing up in the Central Valley, my grandfather had a big old charbroiler, and we used to put the turkeys on the rotisserie. It was a long time ago, though, and I don't remember exactly what the effect was. I think you're going to get a more even browning. You know, the other way to cook a turkey, which is kind of interesting, is to do it upside down, breast down, so the juices are running into the breast, which can have a nice effect also, and I've definitely had good luck with that. My instinct says that putting it on a rotisserie is not going to enhance it that much.
Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Jim in Cupertino. Jim, go ahead.
Hi. I have been doing this turkey that everybody says is the best turkey they've ever had. And what I do is I take the carcass out of the middle, so I make a laid-back turkey. That's what I think Julie Child called it. And then I brine it, and then I put it in a grill, a big grill, but I smoke it at between 200 and 250 for like 4 or 5 hours. With the smoke comes from oak from wine barrels. And you get that winey, you get that oaky, or maple, the odor, the aromas from the grapes. I'm sorry, I can't remember that word. And that's how I do it, and I put it up in the air so the smoke gets not only the top but also the bottom.
Jim, thank you. You are serious about this. Stephanie's nodding her head.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. I'll come over.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Jim, thanks for the call. 866-733-6786 is our number. If you'd like to join in and pose your questions to our three experts here who can tell you anything you want to know about what to do for the Thanksgiving meal, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website as well. I want to go back to even before we get to the cooking question about selecting the bird, fresh versus frozen, free range, where you get it, when you get it.
We've got a couple of hunters with us. You can also just take it out yourself.
The explanation for that is for Tracy Desjardins in particular, Thanksgiving is sort of like your revenge day, right? Because turkeys are all over your property.
Yeah, I have a house up in Sebastopol, and it's crazy how many wild turkeys. I've got about 20 of them that hang out in my yard, and I'm only usually up there on the weekends, and they hang out on my deck. I've got, you know, turkey poo everywhere, and my dog likes to chase them around the yard. You know, giant turkeys. It's kind of funny because he's a little tiny terrier, and he tears after the turkeys and, you know, makes them fly up into the trees and stuff. But anyway, they're very prominent this time of year, and it almost seems like they're taunting because, you know, I live in a kind of residential area and no one's going to shoot them there. And they're just everywhere. So
reminds me of a funny cartoon I remember seeing, I think, in the New Yorker not long after 9/11, where a turkey was wearing a T-shirt with an American flag saying, you know, maybe this will help. But, anyway, what about the freshness factor, Kim? Is fresh how you should go? How much does it matter? How much should you spend? I mean, there are these heritage turkeys.
Yeah,
I mean, you could kind of go nutty with this.
You definitely could. And I think there's a lot of choices out there now, which is great. So you can get almost anything. I personally really think that A free-range organic turkey makes a big difference. So Heritage is quite different than your more traditional bird. It's leaner. It's more muscular. So you want to treat it a little
more
bit
like
differently.
A big game bird.
Right. Right. It's it's got a stronger flavor. Mm-hmm. The you know, more common turkey has a milder flavor. But I like the breast a lot. I mean, I like the dark meat too, but most of my friends and family like the breast. So I get like a big-breasted turkey, but it's still an organic, natural, free-range turkey.
Kim Laidlaw is a KQED writer on our food blog, Bay Area Bites, also a recipe developer. She joins us along with Tracy Desjardins and Stephanie Rosenbaum as we talk about what to do this Thanksgiving. Does it matter where you buy it, Stephanie? Is one store as good as another? Does it matter if you go to a higher-end sort of grocery? How much does it matter where you get the
bird? I think actually it matters less where you're buying the turkey and where the turkey is coming from. I notice a lot of our smaller grocery stores are getting turkeys from some of the same places. BN Ranch, run by Bill Nyman, has wonderful turkeys. Marin Sun Farms also is raising wonderful turkeys. And these are turkeys that are having a regular turkey life. They're not in cages. They're walking around. They're leading a life that the turkey is supposed to have. And basically, they're having a really good life. And then, you know, one perhaps not so good day. I would definitely go for a locally raised bird.
Let's get in one more turkey question. Then we'll move on to some other parts of the Thanksgiving meal. Come back to turkeys as we need to. Let's go to Tom in Oakland. Tom, go ahead.
Hey, yeah. For the first time ever, I can finally have a place to fry a turkey outdoors. Do you have a suggestion for the best turkey fryer? And I'll take my question off
now. By fryer, are you what I think of is different than a grill? What are you actually wanting to do, Tom?
I want to immerse the entire bird in a hot pot of oil and fry it.
Oh, okay, all right. Frying deep fried turkey. Our panel is sort of I don't know what they're doing. Go ahead.
I've done it before. I don't know any brand names for deep fryers, but I have deep fried a turkey. It was a party. and it was actually very tasty, but it was a lot of oil, and it was they're a bit dangerous. So I personally wouldn't do it myself, but
I think people light their houses on fire every year deep frying turkeys. That's well documented. So it is dangerous. I've never done it. I haven't even tasted one before. So I don't have any experience with the deep frying of a turkey. But
believe it or not, Williams-Sonoma is now making a little tabletop turkey fryer. It's basically like a large-sized donut fryer, but it fits a small turkey in it. So, that seems to me like, wow, that is a dust catcher like I've never seen one. But if you're really dedicated and you love deep fried turkey, that is an option that doesn't involve, say, the 30-gallon can't, you know, and all the propane and everything outside.
Tom, thanks for the call. I'm sorry we don't have much more to offer, but we'll put out a little shout out here. If anybody has any advice for Tom on careful, cautious, safe deep frying of turkeys, give us a shout and we'll try to develop a little bit more information for you, Tom. Thanks for the call. Some other comments coming in. Sharon writes, we are hosting our first gluten-free Thanksgiving. Do you have any recommendations for gluten-free stuffing? That seems like an oxymoron, gluten-free stuffing.
Well,
how would you go about that, Stephanie?
If you're in the Bay Area, if you're not making your own gluten-free bread to use for the stuffing, there is a place called Mariposa, which is a bakery in Oakland and also in San Francisco's Ferry Building, and they make bread, and they also make bread cubes that you can use for stuffing if you want a kind of traditional bread stuffing. Otherwise, you know, rice and wild rice stuffings are wonderful. There's
any kind of grains.
Any kind of grain. Anything. If you make a cornbread that's just corn and no wheat.
That
farro is wonderful.
Lovely.
Oh no, not farro.
Farro's
wheat.
Sorry.
Wheat. Not that. Anyway, but any kind of gluten-free grain stuffing would be really nice.
Yeah, and cornbread. I mean,
cornbread.
That's an easy one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Let's stay with stuffing here and go to Graham in Sebastopol. Graham, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I had a couple questions. One is, I want to make an oyster stuffing this year. Do you guys have any tips for me? And my second question was, I was excited to hear about the barbecue turkey, and I was curious, can you stuff a barbecue turkey? It just seems like with brining, you can't do that. It seems like stuffing the bird is kind of passe these days.
Okay, great. First on the oyster stuffing question, anybody have any recommendations on how to go about that? Everyone is shaking their heads. We're not sure. So hang on. We'll now put out a second shout out. We need advice on deep frying, and we need advice on oyster stuffing. On the question of whether or not you can stuff and grill, is that okay to do, Tracy?
I don't usually stuff my turkeys. You know, the whole bacterial thing is relevant, and it scares me just from a safety standpoint. And I keep my stuffing out of my turkey. I use jizye, which is a confit of duck gizzards, in my stuffing, so I have that nice poultry flavor already incorporated into the stuffing. But I do not put the stuffing inside the bird. Yeah.
Any other – let's go around once on stuffing, things that you like about doing it that give it something extra and how you go about making it.
Well, I always add a lot of chestnuts and fresh sage. I like a lot of herbs in my stuffing. I mean, mine is pretty classic, but I like to use fresh herbs instead of poultry seasoning, and I like to use leeks, and I, you know, build it up in that way. And then I like to mix up the bread and use like local bakers,
like different kinds,
and, like different kinds, because it has different textures and different flavors, and I think it's nice to not just have one.
So could you do like sourdough and cornbread or any number of other things?
Mix it up. I mean, I don't usually do corn. It's cornbread or a yeasted bread. But I'll do sourdough and maybe a focaccia and maybe even a wheat, like a light wheat bread or a levain is really nice.
Yeah.
And Tracy, you were saying you use chanterelles in yours, which sounds delicious.
Chanterelles, jizye, which are the confit gizzards, and chestnuts, and then the classic celery and leeks and onions and the herbs that you mentioned, Kim.
Stephanie, anything else on stuffing?
Don't make it too wet. You don't want to be the cafeteria lady, you know, scooping it out with the ice cream scoop.
No, you want the texture.
You want some texture.
And I bake it in a fairly wide, a lot of surface area on the top so that you get that
crunchy brown.
Time for potatoes. Here's an email from Sandra who says, can I do my mashed potatoes in a slow cooker? Can I cook them in advance and reheat? So this gets us into the whole timing question of how you deal with the timing of a Thanksgiving dinner. So let's start on potatoes, and then any other advice about timing would probably be really helpful to people. Stephanie?
Oh, I think Tracy had her hand up.
Well, either way, I think making your gravy ahead of time and making your mashed potatoes ahead of time are both advisable.
Oftentimes,
I see people trying to do the gravy at the last minute, which is a nightmare. That's the last thing you want to be doing. So make your turkey stock. You can use chicken stock or turkey stock.
Oh, so don't worry about doing it with the actual juices from the bird?
You don't need to. If you get ahead of it and you make your stock ahead of time, it's so much easier. And then get the gravy out of the way. That can just be reheated. Same with the mashed potatoes. I make them before and then put them in a stovetop, you know, bain-marie, which is a vessel with water underneath it.
Okay.
I put a lot of butter in my mashed potatoes, so I have to do it like that, otherwise they'll break. But I keep them on the stovetop, keep them warm. Or, you know, you can – mashed potatoes microwave really well. So if you have a microwave, I don't, but it's an easy way to reheat them.
Here's one more stuffing observation. Dave writes, I stuff with wild rice, toasted pecans, dried fruit, fresh apples, celery, and onion. And this year I'm going to do yam latkes. We should.
Yeah.
We'll have to get advice on how to combine Hanukkah and Thanksgiving over the course of our hour. So there's another shout out if people have thoughts about that. We're going to go to pies for a moment. Emma in Santa Clara wants to ask a pie question. Go ahead, Emma.
Hi. So I actually have gone to culinary school, and I'm ashamed to say that the one thing that I have never made is pecan pie. Consequently, it's also my favorite part about Thanksgiving. And so what I was wondering is, because I have consumed a number of pecan pies, what is the secret to having a nice silky interior?
So, Emma, I'm going to hold you with that question. This is our clever way of getting you to stay with us over the station break. And when we come back, we'll get some answers on how to do best by your silky texture question and make the best possible pecan pie. And continue to call and join us. We've got room for you, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our subject this hour, our annual What to Do About Thanksgiving Dinner. Joining us to provide all the answers, Stephanie Rosenbaum, KQED's food blog, Bay Area Bites, author of numerous cookbooks. Kim Laidlaw also writes for Bay Area Bites, also an author of numerous cookbooks. And Tracy Desjardins, the chef and owner at Jardiniere, a French-influenced restaurant in Hayes Valley. And also Mojita Cucina Mexicana. Did I say that right this time?
Mojita.
Mojita. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we want all of you to join us as well at 866-733-6786. But we will return now to Emma in Santa Clara, who called us before the break. And Emma, repeat your key goal here. Silky texture, is that it?
Yeah. So I was wondering, just because I've had a number of pecan pies that it seems like the center kind of breaks, and there'll be like pockets of butter or simple syrup and pies that I've bought. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what the secret is to have a really nice, silky, just wonderful texture in the bottom of your pecan pie.
All right, Emma, thank you. Kim?
I mean, most of the recipes call for corn syrup, and that really, you know, lends itself to a nice silky texture. I would say make sure that you mix it really well before you pour it into the pie and bake it, and then don't overbake it. That might cause it to break or too high a heat, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Any other observations on secrets to pecan pie in particular? Okay. Good luck, Emma. Hope it all goes well. A number of people also want to get to the other part of pie making, which is always a challenge for people. Stephen writes, I tried my pie crust from scratch last year but failed utterly. Can the guests give recommendations on how to make a good pie crust?
Well, Stephanie and I both love to make pie. So I think my biggest tip is, well, I like to make my pie crust in a food processor so the butter stays cold. And don't break up your butter too much. It should be about the size of peas when you get it finally mixed. And let it rest and don't let it get too warm. So make your dough, put it in the fridge for half an hour, and then roll it out. If it starts to get too warm, then put it back in the refrigerator and come back to it.
What's the secret to keeping it from sort of sticking all over the place? An old neighbor friend of mine recommended once, and it actually works pretty well, to put your pie on a piece of wax paper and then put another piece mm-hmm. of wax paper over it and roll it out. So you're rolling on top of the wax paper. Any other tricks to sort of how you roll it out, Stephanie?
Yeah, wax paper or plastic wrap works quite well. But yeah, also keeping the dough really cold. Definitely, I agree with Kim. You know, chill the dough right after you've made it, and that will help. That will help rolling it out. Another trick that I like to do is to get your butter almost frozen but not quite, and then use a box grater, a hand box grater like you would use to grate potatoes or something, and actually grate your butter into the flour, and that mm-hmm. gives you these really small light little butter curls, and then you barely have to touch it, you know. Yeah. You mix in your ice water and then, you know, into the fridge, and the less you touch it, the more likely the better.
We've talked about pumpkin, and we've talked about pecan, haven't really talked about mince, but what else would be a good pie to make for Thanksgiving? Are you all strict traditionalists here?
Apple.
Pumpkin,
apple.
No matter what?
Brown.
Or apple?
Yeah, people like the brown pies.
I make a great cranberry walnut tart that I totally love. It's an old recipe from Gourmet Magazine, actually. Mm-hmm. You can search it online and find it. And it's a tart in the cranberry and walnut. It's basically mm-hmm. like a pecan pie, but it's with cranberry and walnuts.
That sounds great.
And it's
great.
Fantastic. It's really high acid and just really great texture.
And by the way, if you're looking for more recipes, we've got a bunch posted on our website, kqed.org. Some of Tracy's are there. And there also are a number of recipes from other sources that we have on from the KQED's food blog, Bay Area Bites, which both Kim and Stephanie write for. Go ahead.
I've made cherry pie. I've made key lime pie, you know, just so
buttermilk
I've made
pie.
Buttermilk pie, right. Yeah, I've made some odd pies, but I think those are the periphery pies. You really need to have the pumpkin. Probably pumpkin and apple, and then probably pecan, depending on, you know, who's Southern in your group. But I think you need to have maybe those three, and then the other pies are kind of gravy on the outside.
Cheesecake.
Cheesecake.
Yeah,
another.
My grandmother made the most amazing cheesecake, and it used to actually cause, like, family fights. Over
just in case you're not feeling quite satiated after
yeah,
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. It's famous.
That sounds fantastic.
We've got a few answers, perhaps, to some of our deep fryer, and I can't remember the other question. I think it had to do with oyster stuffing, but Josh is joining us with an answer or two. Josh, go ahead.
Hi. So with the frying a turkey, a couple of safety notes are number one, don't fill your fryer basket or your bucket more than halfway with oil, because once the turkey goes in there, it's going to raise the level and it's going to bubble up. And also, don't try to deep fry a frozen turkey. if you see, like, the videos of fryers going up in flames, it's usually when they put a frozen one in there. So don't do that.
Yep.
And then the other comment was about gluten-free stuffing.
Yeah.
You can find gluten-free, like, Udi's or Rudy's bread in the freezer at Safeway. Basically, you can just chew those up and dry them out in your oven at a lower temperature, and you can use them just like breadcrumbs or regular bread.
Josh, thanks. Thanks for helping us solve our Thanksgiving dilemmas.
Oh,
appreciate it.
Another trick that I read, too. This is Stephanie. Don't brine a bird you're going to deep fry, because too much liquid, steam, hot oil, not those two things do not mix. So definitely make sure it's thoroughly thawed and don't brine it first.
Here's a question from Erin. She writes, I'm hosting Thanksgiving dinner and we'll have 19 people. I've never entertained this many people before and I'm up to my eyeballs in planning for this. We're going to have two medium turkeys and a ham. I'd like to dry brine one of the turkeys and have come across some recipes for it. But my question is, what is the space and time efficient method to do all this? So how do I plan, I guess, all of this? Someone want to provide a little bit of planning advice here? And also, how many pies should you have for 19?
For 19 people, I would do at least three. I would do like four
pies. Too many.
Too many. You want leftovers. You need pie for breakfast. Yeah. So at least four pies.
And how and what sort of planning is going to be involved in? And I mean, you for you, 19 probably, Tracy, sounds like 19.
That's pretty typical for me. It's somewhere around there and up. You know, barbecuing that turkey, I think that's, you know, if you can handle a Weber, if you have one, you can borrow one from a friend, you can buy one. They're not expensive. It's pretty foolproof and it helps a lot with logistics. Just if you're doing two turkeys and then everything else that you have going on, it's a little logistically tough if your ovens. I mean, some people have double ovens and then you're okay. But if you're fighting for oven space, then get the turkey outside.
A couple more turkey questions and we'll get back to some other side dishes, which we haven't talked about at all yet. Chris writes, is it always a tom turkey or are we eating hens? I don't know what the significance of that is. Anyone know? We don't know. Sorry, Tom. Another listener writes, if the problem with cooking turkey is getting internal temperature high enough without overcooking the legs, why can't you bring the turkey to room temperature using a water bath before you cook it? Now, that sounds like the opposite. That would be – would that – solve anything to get it all up to warm temperatures? Or that you'd still have the problem with the breast cooking too quickly then, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
But you do want to bring it up to room
temperature. You do want to bring it up to room temperature, but keeping that breast colder, it really does help. Otherwise, the other option that you have is, and this sort of ruins the presentation of the whole turkey, but I've often just pulled the legs off and let those cook a little bit more. Mm. If you want to cook the turkey whole, pull it out when the legs are not quite done and finish those. If you really keep the turkey whole and you haven't differentiated between the temperature of the breast and the legs and you wait for those legs to be done, your breast will be overcooked.
Here's a great question. My aunt hosts Thanksgiving but asks us to contribute a dish. I'm really pressed for time. So what would be the easiest thing to bring without being a total slacker? I sympathize with this questioner.
Something to drink?
Something to
drink. A bottle of wine.
A bottle of wine. A bottle of brandy. Something like that actually is always welcome.
Let's spend a moment on that. Wine suggestions, sort of pairings with the bird. What do you recommend?
Well, cooking is an all-day affair. I mean, I think so. It's nice to have some light whites, I think, while you're preparing. And that's a fun part of the day is, you know, hanging out in the kitchen and waiting for everything to get done. So your lighter whites, I love like Grüner Veltliners, Sauvignon Blanc, those kind of, you know, lighter whites that you can drink. Rieslings have low alcohol, so those are nice to drink while you're cooking. On the table with the bird, I like light reds or richer whites.
Chardonnay, but red as well.
Yeah, Pinot Noir I think is lovely. If you want to have both, I think having, you know, your richer whites and like a light red is really great.
Go ahead.
Oh, yep. And something else that's kind of fun this time of year is to think about some alternatives. Cider. We've got some wonderful local cider producers who make a hard cider that are dry. Tilted Shed, they're up in Sebastopol. They make some really wonderful ciders. There's also mead, which is made with honey.
Are these with the meal before?
Either way. You know, usually they're dry, but they're a little bit sparkling. They're a really nice aperitif. But you could also – I've drunk them during the meal, and they're really nice. There's a company called San Francisco Mead Company that's new, and they're making a wonderful dry California mead, which is a light honey wine. So those mead and cider, I think, are two fun tries if you want to try something different besides wine.
Let's get back to our calls. Philip is next. Philip, go ahead.
Yes. Jacques Pepin on the cooking programs on KQED television has often suggested cooking the bird with the back up at a very high temperature, I think around 500 degrees for 30, 40 minutes, and then turn the bird over so that the breast is not facing the heat all the time. Do you folks have any recommendations in that regard?
Thanks, Philip. Tracy, you mentioned this idea earlier.
Yeah.
Walk us through it.
The tricky part of that is that you're probably going to lose your skin if you do it that way. It's going to stick to the bottom of the pan. The one way you can deal with that is to get your roasting pan hot. You have to have a heavy bottom roasting pan, though. You can't use the aluminum kind. And you put your turkey into a hot pan, and that'll keep the skin from sticking. But it is a good way. It's sort of self-basting, keeping the breast on the bottom, I think, more than keeping it away from the heat, because the heat can actually be more intense depending on your oven, is about it sort of self-basting. So all the juices from the top are kind of going back down into the breast, and it works really well. And then you can flip it over and brown it at the end, because you do want to have that nice brown breast.
Philip, thanks. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Matt, who's going to answer maybe that pesky oyster stuffing question. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was also going to mention, when frying turkeys, stick to a small fryer, and it's a little safer, and, you know, like a Cajun dry rub can be really great. But my wife is an oyster dressing person. I'm a cornbread person, but so we typically make both. For oysters, you know, it's a lot of white bread, you know, celery, you know, carrots, and then typically we get oysters at like Hog Island Oyster Company or in San Francisco. Or an inexpensive way to go is to go to a Korean grocery store and get frozen oysters. They're typically like 12 or 24 for a few bucks, like $4 or $5.
Matt, thanks. So your solution to the fact that you and your spouse like different stuffings is to just do both? Is that the way around that sort of family divide?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we go to my folks, my mom's allergic to oysters, so that answers that one. But otherwise, we'll make a turkey for Christmas, and then we solve it that way by using two holidays.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the call. And by the way, we should also try to get in some Hanukkah, first day of Hanukkah, Thanksgiving combo ideas. If anyone has a good suggestion to make along those lines, we would welcome that. Dana in Palo Alto is next. Dana, go ahead.
Hi. Last year, we tried a new dish. My daughter lives in Denmark, and she said, "Oh, Mom, here they use celery root instead of mashed potatoes, or mashed celery root, or half and half potatoes and celery root," which is a big knobby vegetable, and it's a bit of a challenge to peel it, but you just cut it up like you cut up the potatoes to cook them, and just mash it up along with the potatoes, and it gives a really nice celery flavor, or it can be served as an extra side dish, just plain celery root.
Great. It sounds great, Dana. Thanks. Other ideas for sort of how to – let's talk about vegetables for a moment, actually, either to infuse them into baked potatoes in some interesting way, or other greenery that we ought to include as part of Thanksgiving.
Nice thing about celery root is that you can cook it like mash, but you can put it in a food processor, and it gets really nice and smooth, where mashed potatoes, you can't do that. They'll turn into a glutinous mess. Parsnips are another really nice alternative flavor, and same thing. You can put those in a food processor, no problem, and make a really nice puree out of them, and it's really smooth and delicious. And you kind of handle them like mashed potatoes, and it's kind of the same effect as mashed potatoes, but little different flavor profiles.
Other greens that you'd like to add in? Other vegetable suggestions, Stephanie and Kim?
Brussels sprouts always.
Brussels sprouts, yeah.
That's a natural for the
family. Why?
They're just so autumnal, and you can do so many things with them.
You can hash them. You can shred them up.
You can sear them in your pan.
Persuade me here for a moment that Brussels sprouts are
Searing bacon.
A good idea.
Bacon and or toasted bacon. Hazelnuts. Anything that kind of caramelizes them a little bit. What you don't want to do is boil them to death. That's the bad Brussels sprout that everybody who hates Brussels sprouts hates. But now everybody either roasts them at a really high heat or shreds them and sears them.
Yeah.
Anything that caramelizes them a little bit and brings out their sweetness.
And then add a little sweet in there with it. Sweet and
maple
salty.
Syrup.
So molasses is really nice. A little bit of sweet and then something salty or like
savory.
Nutty, yeah. Savory kind of flavor.
Yeah, I do brown butter and grain mustard and finish with a little sherry vinegar. And people just go crazy.
Nice.
I mean, people that just hate Brussels sprouts love those.
And that recipe of Tracy's, by the way, is on our website. So if you want to be persuaded that Brussels sprouts are actually a fine idea, that recipe is on our website. Let's spend a little more time on vegetables and go to Chris, who wants to talk about vegetarian options, I think. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I think that it's important in this kind of conversation to think about how we can eat with conscience and sustainably on Thanksgiving and throughout the year. And just to raise the issues of, you know, vegetarian options for people who don't, put meat at the center of the meal, if at all. And then also just to remind ourselves that we're living with a food system that's incredibly deeply unsustainable ecologically and for workers. And, you know, not to eat with guilt around that, but to eat with conscience around that and shop, you know, organic and locally and with less and less of a carbon footprint.
Yeah, Chris, thank you. How do you approach that problem? What's something that you do that you'd like to encourage others to consider?
So, I mean, I definitely shop at the farmer's market and try to get local and regional food as much as possible and organic whenever I can afford it and as much as possible. And minimize my meat or poultry consumption. You know, I probably should be vegetarian, but in any case, you know, for those who do eat meat, I'd say minimize it and make it local and sustainable. And then, you know, after Thanksgiving, maybe take a breather from it. You know,
yeah.
Sort of view it as our overall footprint, not just our footprint on Thanksgiving Day itself.
Chris, thanks. Thanks for the reminder and the prompt on that front. Anyone have anything else you want to, if you want to be sustainable and focus on the issues that Chris is raising? Thoughts,
well,
Stephanie?
You know, tomorrow I will be actually at the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market as the market ambassador, meaning I will tell you where to go to find, if you're curious, where do you find kabocha squash or what do you do with beet greens or anything like that, I will be there. I hope I will have a little sash on and I will be just there to answer any kind of questions you might have if you're shopping the Ferry Plaza a farmer's market in San Francisco tomorrow morning.
This isn't the best segue, but I'm going to go from that to gravy. I'm wondering of what the right proportions are, Sarah writes, to make gravy. My kids love it, but sometimes when I try to make a lot of it, the gravy ends up too thin. How much flour, fat, broth does it need, so forth and so on. Gravy making. Kim?
I kind of wing it. I melt butter and then I add enough flour so that it starts to come together and it doesn't look too greasy, but it, you know, it comes together and it browns. And then I just slowly add broth until it's the thickness that I want. So I don't add all the broth at once because that would thin it out a bit too much. And I also make my gravy in advance, like Tracy was suggesting earlier. And then I add any drippings that come out to that base right at the very last minute.
Sounds like you're all proponents of – because I always think of gravy being the last thing. You take the bird out. You got to deal with all that. But you're all saying – go
by
reverse
then you're
the clock.
Frazzled, I think, and you just, you know, you want to have as much done in advance as possible.
So tell me again, for someone not very smart about this sort of stuff, what makes the gravy then if you're not using juices from the bird?
Well, I'll often actually roast a chicken like the week before Thanksgiving, and I'll use the drippings from that as my base along with some butter. So I have some of that nice roasted brownness from the roast chicken, and then I build my base from there.
And usually like a chicken stock or a turkey stock, you can use chicken.
Right.
A lot of times, turkey wings or turkey leg. You can make a nice pot of turkey stock to have going as use it as your gravy liquid.
How much do you all kind of pace yourselves so that you're not like just fried and frazzled by the end of it? Sometimes feels like this is such an effort, and then you sit down and like 12 minutes later, everyone's done, and you think, wow, how did that happen? I mean, what do you have some suggestions for how to both enjoy the day and take it all in, but also for the person who's sort of running the kitchen to not sort of be maxed out by the time you sit down and eat?
Tracy? Well, some of those hints that we gave of doing the gravy ahead of time, doing the mashed potatoes ahead of time, freeing up some oven space. You know, I think that it's a difficult feat even for a professional, understanding the timing is tricky. I think putting a timeline together and actually drawing it out so that you sort of, you know, you figure out when you want to eat and you go backwards from there. And every hour you sort of pencil in the things that you need to do. And having that timeline, I think, can really help a lot. Mm-hmm. And just so that you sort of are pacing yourself the whole day and getting stuff done in an efficient manner. So at the end, you're not scrambling around.
Other tips, Stephanie or Kim, on how you enjoy the day?
Yeah, remind yourself that really you're not being a professional chef. You know, people aren't coming to your house because they want a restaurant meal. They're coming to your house because they love you, because they're family, they're friends. They want to share in all this conviviality, and almost it's like the food is sort of the excuse to be there, but really it's about enjoying everybody. And something I think also too that professional chefs do is they keep your workspace clean. And as you're going from task to task, you know, tidy up, you know.
So you feel orderly.
You're cleaning up, you know, clean up and then do your next task. So you don't end up with a cutting board that's got 65 pieces of, you know, onion skin on it. You know, just keep your workspace tidy, and that will kind of help you not feel quite so out of control.
Yeah. Kim. And I do as much as I possibly can in the days leading up to Thanksgiving. And because I want to have fun with it. People are there to enjoy themselves. I want to enjoy myself as well. So have a glass of Prosecco and ask people to help you out in the kitchen.
Yeah, people want to help.
We have 6 minutes, so we're going to barrel through as much as we can here. Michael in Napa, go ahead.
Hi. A couple years ago, we decided to do something different. So we marinated a turkey in fresh mole the day before and then roasted that wrapped in foil, and it was delicious. One of the best, most unique Thanksgivings we'd had in a while.
You're getting vigorous affirmative nodding from
yes.
our panelists here. Yeah, Kim,
that
you want
to? That's amazing. I would love to taste that.
Yeah, I mean, turkey in mole is a traditional Mexican dish. It works really, really well together. It's a great tip.
Michael, thank you. And to Deborah in San Francisco. Deborah, go ahead.
Hi. I luckily lucked into buying a house that has a wood-burning oven in the backyard, pizza oven. And I'm wondering if I can make my turkey in the wood oven.
Absolutely. You just have to control your temperature. You either want to start out low and let that turkey cook slowly and then turn up the heat at the end so you get it nice and brown, or start out with it pretty hot so you get the browning on the outside and let that oven sort of fade out a little bit. But it's sort of the same concept as cooking it in an oven, which is varying your temperatures so that it cooks adequately at the right temperature, and then you get that heat to get it nice and brown.
Say that again, Tracy, about varying temperatures. So let's say you're not as fortunate as Deborah and you're just going to do this conventionally in your oven.
Yeah.
What temperature do you start at? How do you adjust? What's the plant?
Is it like 350? Is that in an oven? I mean, I don't usually do it in an oven. So I think it's like around 350 to start out. And then I would increase the temperature at the end. I'd cook it covered with foil so it stays nice and moist. And then take that foil off at the end and turn up your temperature so you get that nice brown baste at the end. That's my instinct in the
oven. That's how I've always done it in the oven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Deborah, good luck with the pizza oven. Sounds like
foil.
It could be great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Paul writes, what about other fowl, goose, pheasant, duck, Cornish game hens?
Yes.
Yes.
I love duck.
All right. We'll just keep moving. Thank you. Michael
just
writes, this is our mole comment, so we already got to that. Leslie says, you put sugar in your brine? Ick. Someone want to defend sugar in brine?
Well, it helps with the browning. It helps with the browning process in the end, and you need that balance of sugar and salt in a brine. That's pretty typical of any brine.
It doesn't make it sweet.
No,
yeah,
not
you
sweet.
Doesn't
taste
add sweetness.
It. No.
Here's something from Daniel on brining. An attempt to I'm not sure. We'll find out. I'll read this. It's an attempt to mix it up this year. I'm thinking of creating a Ballantine of turkey. I've done this with chicken several times, never with a 12-pound bird. I plan on taking a similar approach. I don't know what this means, so someone's going to have to help me here with this larger size. Will I lose flavor without cooking the bird to the bone? Ballantine of turkey?
Ballantine. It's
sorry.
A French technique. It's taking out all the bones and rolling it. It works really well. I've done sort of a version of turducken that way, which is turkey, chicken, duck, other little birds you can stuff in there too if you have them. Ballantines work really, really well. You get even cooking, and they're fantastic. They're easy to handle too. When you get to the carving point, you don't have to deal with the carcass, and Ballantines are fantastic.
Let's get back to vegetables. Lorna in San Francisco. Lorna, go ahead.
I've been a vegetarian for about 30-some years, so here are some tips. For those people who would like to have some alternatives, there are companies known as Tofurky and a company out of Canada who came out with a turkey-less breast medallions that are breaded with their own gravy. They're at Trader Joe's. Fantastic. Another one that I've used is called the Field Roast, which is an apple sage sausage to die for with butternut squash and like a souffle with spinach and butternut squash. People eat this and they go, I can't believe this is not meat. And it's about the herbs and the flavoring and not just the bulk of the meat. So if people would like to have some other alternatives, check places like Rainbow, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's in the Bay Area, and you can find some really socially conscious and birdless but very tasteful alternatives.
Lorna, thank you. Thanks for adding that into our conversation and our menu possibilities. Just have a minute left. Sort of best tips, I guess, I want to ask you last about how to move into this day a week from yesterday and what you think people should be focused on that will enhance their Thanksgiving experience.
Make your own cranberry sauce.
Yeah?
It takes 2 seconds.
I agree.
And so give us the 2 second recipe.
It's water, cranberries, and less sugar than it says on the bag. You can add a little orange juice and or Grand Marnier. Just cook it not till they're totally mush, but quickly cook it until they're just starting to pop. They'll set. They'll be delicious and no high fructose corn syrup like there is in the jar.
Yeah. Tracy?
Salad. We didn't talk about salad, and there's so many wonderful salads, and I think that's always a great balance to all the richness that you have going on. Fuyu persimmons, celery root salad, pomegranates this time of year, apples.
Kale.
Yeah, kale. Mm. All those. I mean, I like to always have 2 or 3 salads that give that balance to the meal.
Kim?
I say make your own pie crust. You can make it today and freeze it. It's actually better frozen sometimes and to just defrost it the night before.
Pleasure to have you all here. Really fun to have our conversation. Kim Laidlaw, writer of for Bay Area Bites, also an author of a variety of books. Thanks so much for being with us,
Kim.
Thank you. Stephanie Rosenbaum here too, also with Bay Area Bites and author of also a number of cookbooks. Stephanie, thank you. And Tracy Desjardins, chef and owner at Jardiniere, a French-influenced restaurant in Hayes Valley. And I'm going to try this one more. Actually, you just say the other restaurant.
Mojita.
All right. Mojita Cochina Mexicana. Thanks all very much for
Happy
being here.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Thanksgiving. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our interns are Keelan Cronin, Nick Zabrowski, Victor Vahe, Angela Johnston, and Aaron Newpart. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.